On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show. Stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools, empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. So grateful you joined us here today. If you're joining us live here in the Seattle area, you're probably listening on 1150 AM KKNW. You might be listening anywhere around the world on Transformation Talk Radio or somewhere after the fact on some of the, I don't know, it's like 90 different places this show ends up, including on ChristineUpchurch.com. But wherever and whenever you're listening from, you're going to be grateful you joined us. But before I tell you who our VIP guest is, I want to say hello to Mr. Benny Mathers, who does his magic with all the technology so you can hear these wonderful conversations. Good morning, Batman.
I want to go with Batman. I knew Benny you were going to say Mathers. Batman. I like Batman. I think you were going to try with that one.
We've already had a really silly start to our day. Yes. I mean, you asked me a question with a very obvious answer. How do you pronounce the guest name? And you... on a dare, mispronounced it when you said hello to her.
Yeah, I did. Well, the thing is like, there was no really dare. I'll do it anyways, just because I think a personality like mine kind of shines through a little bit, just on the kind of like a little mini icebreaker.
You like to tease.
Yeah,
yes.
I do just a little bit. I don't go too deep with them. But I was able to, you know, kind of smooth out. But knowing me, though, like Benny or, you know, other names too, it gets mistaken. But you got to just roll with it. It's okay.
Yeah. Well,
yes.
I mispronounced your name.
But that's okay.
We're even now. Now, if our guest mispronounces my name, then we're all set. And I'm really excited about our guest
yes,
today.
Yes, let's bring her on.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep, yep, yep.
I'm talking about Jeanine Roth. Now, if you haven't read her books, her name is probably very familiar because you've probably seen it on the New York Times bestseller list many, many, many times. She is the author of 10 books, including the just-released This Messy, Magnificent Life, and she has got New York Times bestsellers When Food is Love, Lost and Found, and Women, Food, and God, as well as The Craggy Hole in My Heart and The Cat Who Fixed It. She's a workshop facilitator who has reached thousands and thousands over the past 30 years in her groundbreaking workshops and retreats. She's appeared on numerous national shows, including The Oprah Winfrey Show 2020, The Today Show, Good Morning America, and The View. She lives in California. With Charms of Hummingbirds, her husband Matt, and Izzy the Fabulous Eating Disordered Dog, which we have to hear more about. I am so grateful to have the author of This Messy, Magnificent Life, Jeanine Roth, here. Jeanine, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
You know, I'm always curious if somebody has had many, many successful books, what inspires a person to write the next? And I know that your new book is somewhat different. What inspired you to go here as opposed to like just leaving it where you were at and continuing with all the retreats?
What inspires me to write is writing itself. That's one thing. It's sort of a multi-pronged answer there. I think there are a couple of things. One is that the process itself of writing, which is a way, at least for me, that I know what I know that I don't realize I know before I started writing about it.
Oh,
so
I love it.
It's a way to spiral into answers and more questions and a kind of aliveness and wonder that comes alive when I start the process of writing. It's a big don't know there. Usually I start every book with a question. So that's part of it. And when we start talking about the book, I'll tell you about that in relationship to this book. But it's only because I want to know something that I don't know, and writing is the way that I discover that. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's the process of writing that I love.
And do you believe that if we ask a question and explore it in one way or another, and you say you do it through writing, do you think that we ultimately can get some sort of an answer?
I think we get many different kinds of answers. I don't think there's one answer to a question. Uh-huh. I think answers can come on many levels. For instance, you can get some guidance about what the next step is.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be the ultimate answer you're looking for, but allowing yourself to be curious and open about a question, just it sort of opens the door to whatever wants to come in, whatever guidance there is.
Uh-huh.
And I think there's a lot of guidance that each of us could tap into, could access, that we're not quite aware of because we think we should already know the answers. We judge ourselves for not knowing the answers. We think we should be there already.
Right.
We judge ourselves for not being there already.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of get it now quick or get it yesterday. How come you're still struggling with this?
Right.
That doesn't allow us to be open.
So I know you talk a lot about self-judgment in one way or another. How does that interfere with us moving forward in expansive and joyful ways?
Yeah. Beautiful question. I think it is the number one factor in shutting down any kind of change. It's the, at least how I see it and how I've been taught.
Uh-huh.
You know, we each have what's called a superego or inner critic, inner parent, whatever you want to call it, by the time we're 4 years old. It's part of the development of any ego. We have to learn not to throw food on the wall. We have to learn not to bite and hit people.
Uh-huh.
We have to learn how to go to friends' houses.
Uh-huh.
You know, we have to learn all that stuff, and the way we learn it is by internalizing authority. And that's very helpful when we're younger. What starts happening is that that becomes a protective mechanism. So to keep us from risking, from any kind of change, from doing anything but the status quo.
Uh-huh.
And so when we start getting on the edge of what we've known, what we've experienced, which is what change actually is, going to that edge and a little bit behind and a little beyond it,
uh-huh.
That mechanism, I call it the crazy aunt in the attic now,
uh-huh.
comes in and says, uh-oh, danger, you won't be loved, you're not worth it. I mean, it will
right.
use anything it can, and it's usually harsh and mean judgments, which
mm-hmm.
I have found out both from listening to myself and the way I talk to myself, which is shocking, but also doing this with hundreds and hundreds and actually thousands and thousands of people and asking them to write down judgments they've made within the first half an hour of a retreat,
uh-huh.
for instance.
Right.
And they have so many judgments. And the way they talk to themselves is in such a harsh and mean and abusive voice, in a voice in which they wouldn't talk to anybody else.
Yes, and I've actually done exercises over the years of just listening to myself, sometimes just first thing in the morning, and I'm shocked the kind of the self-critical, you know, direction and redirection and admonishing, and it's kind of shocking what goes through my head sometimes.
Yeah. It is. It's shocking.
And
it's shocking, actually, yes. That's why it's good to recognize it, to recognize that, name it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I've got a voice in my head that's going on usually 24/7. I mean, except in very deep sleep.
Right.
Or if I knock myself out in mm-hmm. some way, distracting myself or drinking or on the internet or watching cute animal videos on YouTube. You know,
that does it for me, yeah.
So, but it's going on most of the time, and if you name it, and then you actually write down the things it's telling you,
mm-hmm.
but you write it down in the third person, you shouldn't do that one more time. I can't believe you dare to believe that change is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody will be shocked.
Yeah.
And then you'll be able to start disengaging from it and seeing that voice and you are not the same. But until you name it and recognize it, you believe that you and it are exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you know, I think about the self-judgment associated with going beyond the status quo, because we humans are tribal in nature. You know, once upon a time, if we didn't fit in one way or another, we might not survive. We might get banished from the tribe.
That's right.
So how do we get beyond that ingrained physiological, evolutionary need to be accepted by others and then step further into that challenge and change?
By having a lot of compassion for ourselves, by understanding that going along with the status quo is what we were taught, mm-hmm. by listening and telling the truth in terms of what we actually want, and by putting ourselves around people and in situations in which that which we want, that wasn't correct English, what, you know, that we want
uh-huh.
is encouraged and supported and modeled, even though it is not in the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is no change if we stay within the status quo. And
right.
most of us are longing for something that we can hardly name.
Yeah.
We know that something bigger is possible. We know it. We can feel this promise of ourselves, just of ourselves,
that
we're capable of such a bigger life, and we're capable of being in touch with something that goes beyond the small things on which we've come to rely. Not that those things are bad. We're just not sure how to access them,
mm-hmm.
or where to go for them, or that it's important that we put ourselves in situations and around people. And it can just be reading books
uh-huh.
at the beginning
right.
that really support that in ourselves.
That's great. We have to go to a quick break, but stay tuned for lots more with Janine Roth. Join us for a transformational conference with five, that's right, five of the leading pioneers in the fields of science and spirituality, all in one place. Join best-selling authors and teachers Greg Braden, Dr. Bruce Lipton, Lynn McTaggart, Dr. Joe Dispenza, and Lee Carroll in both individual workshops as well as a weekend of keynote presentations and panel discussions. At this extraordinary event, you'll get to experience some of the brightest leaders of our world today, empowering you with groundbreaking new information, deep wisdom, and practical tools to transform your life. Come connect with others and expand your consciousness in beautiful Nanaimo on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, June 14th through 19th. For more information or to register for what some are expecting to be one of the best conferences of 2018, visit shalohaproductions.com. That's shalohaproductions.com. Or visit the individual speakers' websites.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant, Powerful Moms Helping Everyday Women Create Extraordinary Lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
Let It Go Radio. The future awaits you. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Barbara Scheidegger explores the way to clarity, peace, and how to live a successful life on your terms by turning negative experiences into positive ones. Barbara's curiosity about the human experience drives her both personally and professionally. As a life coach, author, and renowned clinical hypnotherapist, Barbara knows how to move forward in a natural, organic way without side effects. If you want to grow, be sure to tune in to Let It Go Radio. To learn more, visit letitgohypnosis.com.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Time. Talk Radio.
What is a brilliant culture and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Welcome back to the Christine F. Church Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. You know, Janine, I'm fascinated with your own personal process and what you teach to others. Now, I know that Women, Food, and God was an international sensation. It was on the New York Times bestselling list for, I don't know, 6 months, at least 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
This book, however, is different, and yet there are connections. How does it relate, your new book?
With Women, with, Food, and God, well, I'll just jump to the new book. I, for myself, having had such a painful hell realm history with food and having climbed out of that and actually resolved that in a way, my relationship with food still undergoes refinement and changes, but mm-hmm. it's not a cause of suffering anymore for me. I use certain ways of being with myself, certain tools. And I realized before I wrote this book that I was still living with some kind of low-level anxiety and discontent despite everything I knew. And mm-hmm. I wanted to see if it wasn't as conscious as this sounds, because I didn't even realize I had been doing this till near the end of the book. But the question that I started writing the book with was, is it possible to live daily with a sense of spaciousness and ease and acceptance with some kind of flow rather than this ongoing low-level self-judgment, discontent, and anxiety?
Mm-hmm.
And to break the trance of worthlessness, to break the
yes.
trance of discontent. Because I was finding myself still succumbing, I should say, or actually having that be in the background of daily life. And I just didn't want to do it anymore. And I didn't, and I wanted to stop fixing myself. I'd been in therapy for decades, uh-huh. and I have been doing rigorous spiritual practice for decades as well. And I was noticing, okay, it's not integrating into my daily life.
Uh-huh.
I let's see, is it possible to integrate that into my daily life? So that's how I started.
The fixing ourselves, that's really big. It's big in pop culture. It's even big in some of the consciousness community. And people are often trying to improve themselves. What's wrong with that, and how does that get in our way?
You know, what I discovered was that there was no fixing mm. of the things that I thought needed to be fixed. That I believed, I really, really, really believed this, that there, when I started therapy and also when I started medicating, that there was going to come a time where it was just going to be clear sailing. Peace forever.
Mm-hmm.
Freedom forever. A sort of constant state of it,
uh-huh.
meaning that the things that I thought needed to be fixed in me, my, the way I catastrophize things, the fact that I often fall into what I call the archetype of the little match girl, the person who feels like she doesn't belong, that
uh-huh.
love is for everybody else and
right.
not for her, this feeling of worthlessness. Everybody has from 3 to 5 themes, as far as I can say. They're the top tunes of what you get triggered by and what you then feel about yourself. And
okay.
I had my own And I thought there would come a time where I would no longer be feeling those things. They would be healed. They would be fixed.
Right.
What I realized was that that's impossible. There's never, ever, ever going to come a time where there's going to be everlasting peace.
Mm-hmm.
What there is, though, is a way to be with those things, the little match girl, the anxiety, the catastrophizing, mm-hmm. the worthlessness, when they come up. There is actually a way to hold them, meet them, welcome them, be with them that doesn't require fixing or getting rid of. Much more relaxing,
mm-hmm.
much more doable, much more livable.
So let me play devil's advocate here for a minute.
Yeah.
Why should we want to embrace, allow, and give that portion of ourselves a voice?
Because it's there anyway. It's not like you can cut it out.
Mm-hmm.
Forget that. That's a myth that we've been taught. That's a lie that we've been told. It doesn't happen like that. It's never happened like that. Even with food, you know, when people say, and I see this all the time, I see there is no there mm-hmm. with food. People say, well, when I lose 5 pounds, when I lose 10 pounds, when I lose 30 pounds, then I'll be there, then I'll relax. Then they get there, and this happens with money, too, because
mm-hmm.
I found this out by, you know, interviewing a lot of financial advisors. People raise the bar.
Uh-huh.
There is no getting there.
Right.
People lose 5 or 10 pounds and then say to me, I would die to be as thin as I was 5 years ago when I would have died to have been thinner.
Uh-huh.
So unless we start now practicing to let ourselves be who we are and have what we have, and you know what? This doesn't preclude understanding that there are some objective
mm-hmm.
things
right.
that, you know, we would like to change. It doesn't preclude acting in the outside world. It's not like, okay, well, I'll accept myself and then I'll just lay around on the couch eating, you know, bonbons and never being motivated to do anything. That's what people fear they will feel. Like, I had a retreat student who just only saw the negative in
mm-hmm.
things. That's
uh-huh.
all. And because she only saw the negative, she was always trying to fix herself, change things,
uh-huh.
make herself better. And we just asked her to take on a practice of noticing 5 good things every day. So
uh-huh.
I'm not talking about something that's hard to do here. And she was like, no, you know, I need more therapy. She had already had a lot of therapy. She
uh-huh.
started doing that simple practice and writing to her group, because in our retreats, we divide into small groups, writing to her group, what are the 5 things she saw every day. After a while, she started looking for those things. After a while, she started feeling a ground of positivity,
mm-hmm.
of goodness, from which she could then look at other parts of her life that needed, you know, that needed her attention.
Uh-huh.
Not that needed her judgment, but that needed her attention.
So do you think sometimes we use self-judgment, that inner critic, in order to avoid dealing with some things that are coming up for us?
Yes, I think that's a great question. I think what happens is that we might feel a little scared
mm-hmm.
or vulnerable or open. We might not know what to do next, what will happen next. You know, I was talking to some people last night about this. What happens with food and weight, for instance, is that people start losing weight, and I wrote about this in This Messy Magnificent Life in the chapter on lasting weight loss, and then they start feeling exposed
uh-huh.
or they start feeling vulnerable.
Right.
And rather than just take a breath, take a moment, okay, let's look, let's see what this is associated with, what's going on here. One person said to me, wrote to me, and then what happens is that I start eating and I start gaining weight again
mm-hmm.
so that I don't feel exposed, but also so that I will have losing weight to look forward to and tell myself, although it's a lie, that I will be happy when I get there.
Wow, because otherwise you have to face that you're not unhappy.
Right.
When you get there, you're still not happy.
That's right, that it didn't fix it, that it's deeper, and it's not that complicated here.
Uh-huh.
You know, sometimes people listen to me and they say, oh, it sounds really complicated. Yes, it's really much easier to believe in the lie that when you lose weight or when you get the perfect house or when you have the perfect job or when you find the perfect partner, you will be, when you get the perfect sweater, you will be happy. It's so much easier to believe that, but people already know that's not true.
Right.
They know that's not true because everybody has gotten something they thought was going to do it.
Right.
Even if it was to lose 5 pounds,
that
didn't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's just, okay, what's my belief here about myself, that I'm not whole, that I'm incomplete, that something's wrong with me, that you start going down into your core belief about being alive, what you believe you deserve to have.
Right.
If you let yourself have what you already have, and most people don't do that, they constantly take it away from themselves.
Yeah, yeah. And that's fascinating, the self-sabotage to avoid dealing with the core issues. We have to go to another quick break, but stay tuned for lots more with Janine Roth.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. As a former research statistician, my scientific background is what many would call sensible. For more than a decade now, I have been working in the field of energy medicine, facilitating sessions and teaching around the world. People from the mainstream often ask me, how did a sensible woman like you end up working in such an alternative field? Implicit in their question is the underlying assumption that the field of subtle energy, such as energy healing and intuition, isn't sensible. But I believe it is very sensible. Even scientists are able to measure aspects of this. Approaching life from an energetic perspective brings us new opportunity for healing and transformation. And from a practical standpoint, even if you can't rationally explain how something works, if you experience a shift from it, then doesn't it make it pretty sensible? Please visit stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
A word of caution, if you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, this book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or ebook, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
Tune in to Synergenetic Living Radio, where Rick and Grace Paris discuss the synergenetic way of life, what it means to truly change your perspective in life, what it means to take control of your life and manifest your true desires. For more information on Rick and Grace Paris and Synergenetic Living, check out synergeneticliving.com. Get clear on the life you desire and the current life you are creating and what is between the two. Synergenetic Living, living life loud.
Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns and certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit stellarreflections.com. That's stellarreflections.com.
second and walking around naked in your living room. Yeah.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. I'm so enjoying my conversation today with Janine Roth. She is a New York Times bestselling author, multiple times, multiple books, and you probably recognize the title Women, Food, and God. And her latest book is This Messy, Magnificent Life, A Field Guide. Okay, Janine, so I think that many of us want to have a neat and tidy life in a variety of ways. Is that possible?
Well, given that we are in a human body and we're living here on the earth plane, which regardless of current political issues and winds is challenging because these bodies are fragile, they're vulnerable, they get sick, they get into accidents, people we love get sick, they die.
Right.
There is no way. And that's what the book is about on some level. It's about understanding that what we call the messiness of our lives is itself the doorway to the magnificence of our lives. It's not somewhere else. It's not when we get rid of it. It's actually using what we already have, what's in front of us every single day,
right,
as portals to what we want most.
I love that. Say that one more time because this is really profound.
It's about using the so-called messiness of our lives, not trying to get rid of it, not trying to have a higher version of an ideal life that we think will someday be possible, but letting ourselves have the life we have now with all its challenges and using those challenges, that messiness, as a portal to the magnificence or to that feeling of thriving and of a big life that we all want.
I love that. So, Janine, you talk about how women face something different in our culture than men associated with all this, in terms of them stepping into their greatness.
Right.
What is that?
The fact of having a woman's body that is in our culture objectifying and often harassed and misused. And it's about something I realized in writing this book, and this was before the Me Too movement and Time's Up movement. I realized that I had taken it for granted that having a woman's body came along with being, this is going to sound much stronger than I mean, mauled in some way, being pinched, being grabbed, using my body as a transactional tool. Did I realize I was doing this when I was growing up? Of course not. Is this language much stronger than how I felt? Yes. But it never felt good,
right.
And yet it felt necessary.
Mm-hmm.
It felt, this is part of the program. This is part of what happens when you have a woman's body. And it wasn't until I learned something called the Red String Project, which I write about in the book, which was learning in therapy during my last stint of therapy, that I didn't feel okay about saying no.
Uh-huh.
I didn't feel okay about saying I don't want to. Mm-hmm. Don't come closer. I felt like I needed to be nice. And I felt somehow that having boundaries where it was not okay for people to come closer than I wanted them to. And I learned this when my therapist started walking towards me.
Uh-huh.
And told me when to stop when she got too close. And never came a point where I wanted her to stop.
Uh-huh.
And she said, everybody's got or should have a sense of this.
Right.
But because it's been violated so many times and because there are shoulds and shouldn'ts along with it, it's hard to know that. And women have inherited this.
Yes.
And so it's really important to learn how to say no. And what the Red String Project is that you put it around yourself. It's a 6-foot piece of string.
Mm-hmm.
You put around yourself in a circle, and you close the ends of it.
So beyond the edges of your body, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that there's space between you and it.
Uh-huh.
And close the ends. Really sorry. My husband was supposed to take care of the dog.
That's okay.
And did not.
Well, we've already talked about your dog. You know,
yes.
In the intro.
Well,
so we know your dog's there.
Okay. My dog is definitely, you know, very loud. Good. My husband has gotten it. Yes. Knowing where you end and your dog begins, that would be a really good thing.
There's probably a lot less space between the string and the dog.
I would say.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, go back to the red string.
Yeah.
When you're sitting in a circle and with the string around you for the space. So you sit, and I do this with my retreat students all the time, and I practice this for quite a long time. So I understood how important it was to be able to feel like I took up space. I was allowed, this is one of the touchstones in the book, to stand in your own two shoes.
Right.
And that means come out of your mind and into your body. Feel your feet on the floor. Feel your hands if you're sitting down. Feel your butt in the chair. Just come into this body. Most of us live in our minds.
Mm-hmm.
And because we don't live in our bodies, many tributaries, many sort of results or, you know, happen from that or consequences. One is that we don't defend it. And by that, I mean, we don't say no.
Uh-huh.
That's not okay
right.
with me. We don't live here. And so, I mean, on the simplest level, using our senses, seeing what we see, hearing what we hear, taking in the gorgeousness that is available. It is challenging to have a human body, but it's also fabulous to have a human body.
It is, yes.
Yeah. And there's a lot of joy that's available that we miss if, for instance, we're always living in our head, even seeing a sunset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what the brain scientists say is that in order to really change the programming of our body, or our brains, actually, we have to experience something consistently and deeply. We have to saturate ourselves in it, even 12 seconds a day, 5 times a day. 12 seconds, that's 1 minute altogether, of really taking in the good, something really, really, really good, and letting yourself have it. You know, what I noticed in my years of working with food, and of course I'm still doing that, is we do eating meditations at my retreat every day.
Uh-huh.
Every single day we sit and eat together, and I work with people on their relationship with food, which really isn't about food. It's about their beliefs about deprivation and nourishment and pleasure and joy and enough. And if they've taken a whole lot of food, much more than their bodies could actually want, there's a belief of, I can never get enough of what I really want.
Right.
So I'll just take more of this on my plate
than
what I want. And what we focus on is letting themselves have the bite that's in their mouth before they reach for the next bite.
Mm-hmm.
So to have what you already have allows you to fill up. And that's what enough is. It's it's not a quantity. It's a relationship to what you already have.
Mm-hmm. And in your book, you talk about the fear associated with that being the end of it, and not having more. So it goes beyond deprivation. It's kind of like facing the end of something.
Well, it's realizing, you know, in that piece. It's called The Last Bite. I was sitting at the table with a bowl of tomato soup and realizing I didn't want it to end, and it was ending very quickly.
Yes.
And I realized that every time something ends, there's a tiny little way that we have to face, oh, something has ended.
Uh-huh.
You know, things don't last forever, and that's very difficult for a lot of us. It was difficult for me in that moment because it was like, okay, well, now what's as good as this bowl of coconut cream tomato soup? It was delicious. And so it's about that, too.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. So do women somehow use their bodies as an excuse for not showing up in their power in the world?
Well, I want to go back. One last sentence I want to say about the tomato soup and then the women in power. What I realized in eating that tomato soup and not wanting to stop was that jewels are scattered everywhere.
Mm.
But I'll never see them if I keep trying to eat them. And by that I mean if I keep eating tomato soup when I'm not hungry for it anymore, when I've reached fullness, what starts happening is that I don't notice anything else except for how full I am.
Right, right. And there's a different types of sustenance waiting around.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right, but you just have to take that little risk. It's that moment of stopping. Now, about women in power, which is, you know, my new passion that I'm interested in, because of this, all of these, you know, women coming up movements that are happening. And I've actually always been interested in this because my question to women for a long time has been, if you stop binding, wrapping up your energy in the obsession with your body size, with weight, think of the energy that you would have that could transform you, your family, your community. It would be enough energy to light up a city.
It's
so much energy.
Yes.
And when a woman is judging her weight, that dampens her power. Of course it does.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think back to years when my children were younger and feeling uncomfortable in a bathing suit. And I look at pictures of myself thinking, I don't know why, but, you know, I was. And having it sort of restrict some of my activity with them because I didn't want to be in a bathing suit that much.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Sad, but true. We have to go to another quick break, but stay tuned.
If you're not the one for me, then I'll come, I can bring you to your knees. If you're not...
Please join us for a transformational conference with five, that's right, five of the leading pioneers in the fields of science and spirituality, all in one place. Join best-selling authors and teachers Greg Braden, Dr. Bruce Lipton, Lynn McTaggart, Dr. Joe Dispenza, and Lee Carroll in both individual workshops as well as a weekend of keynote presentations and panel discussions. At this extraordinary event, you'll get to experience some of the brightest leaders of our world today, empowering you with groundbreaking new information, deep wisdom, and practical tools to transform your life. Come connect with others and expand your consciousness in beautiful Nanaimo on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, June 14th through 19th. For more information or to register for what some are expecting to be one of the best conferences of 2018, visit shalohaproductions.com. That's S-H-A-L-O-H-A productions.com. Or visit the individual speakers' websites.
Best-selling author, spiritual life, and business coach Joe Nunziata brings his higher energy and no-nonsense style to people who are ready to make powerful changes now. Wake up, step up, power up with a shot of Joe. Join Joe the second and fourth Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern for 30 minutes of high energy, no nonsense, and powerful tools to make powerful changes. Visit joenunz.com. That's joenunz.com.
Interested in deepening your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit www.esotericstudies.net.
on the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
The knowledge book currently studied in 39 countries and 15 languages around the world accelerates our evolution, takes us out of depression, offers universal truth, protects us, and makes us stronger, both spiritually and physically. So if you are interested in the knowledge book, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net and tune in to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Why do I hate the idea of being free? And if I'm not the one for you, you've got to stop holding me.
Welcome back. We're here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio, and you might be listening to the archives on ChristineUpchurch.com. You know, Janine, this hour is flying by, and before it ends, I want to make sure our listeners know how they can get in touch with you and find out what's going on with you.
Yes, great. Well, one thing that I want people to know about right away is that I'm teaching a master class called Women, Weight, and Power, Releasing the Energy of Obsession. I'm teaching that in a few weeks, and the way that people can find out about that is to go to JanineRossBook.com. It's a free video masterclass with the purchase of a book. And
wonderful.
So if they go to JanineRossBook.com, they'll find out all the information they need in order to register for that.
Okay, so it's GeneNRoth.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the link to the book?
JanineRossBook.com.
JanineRossBook.com.
Right.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
And do you have online workshops? Do you have appearances
in
various cities?
I have two online courses that people can do.
Uh-huh.
And I have a retreat coming up in May in a couple of weeks. It has a few spaces left. It's a fabulous immersion into this work. People fly in from all over the world to do it. It's 6 days.
Uh-huh.
And it's people's lives are never the same once they do it because they get a glimpse, actually more than a glimpse, an extended period of feeling of immersion and saturation in what you and I have been talking about, that peacefulness, the spaciousness that's possible to have in the middle of your daily life.
Mm, yes, and that ease, that's so essential for enjoying life and allowing change to occur.
Right.
So, is this for women? I just want to make sure. Is this?
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh.
But all that information would be on my website, JanineRoth.com.
Fabulous. GeneNROth.com.
Right.
Wonderful. Now, you talk about how you personally are a meditation failure. What do you mean by that?
What I meant by that was that despite my many, many years of meditating, first of all, I didn't ever really love meditating. And
uh-huh.
Some people really love it.
Right.
I have students, retreat students, who love meditation. It was never a love for me.
Uh-huh.
But I did it anyway because I felt like it was going to get me somewhere. I
yes.
loved the process,
uh-huh.
but I had a goal in mind of being a peaceful person who went into parasympathetic nervous system mode immediately,
very
fluid and easygoing. And I thought that would be me, and it wasn't. And finally, after decades of doing that, I realized I was never going to get there that way
mm-hmm.
because I kept positing it as a goal, just like when I lose weight, I'll be happy, and when I'm fixed, I'll be happy.
Uh-huh.
And so I realized for me it was about the day-to-day, moment-to-moment. And I talk about that in this messy, magnificent life,
mm-hmm.
about learning how to take some conscious breaths every day.
Right.
Learning how to stop complaining. I talk about that, about the practice of not complaining and not not always being in a fight against reality. Uh-huh. The problem for me was that I'd meditate and eventually get to a calm space, let's say in a half an hour or an hour, and then I'd go and I'd be exactly the same in the rest of my life.
Right.
And I wanted the rest of my life to be different.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to figure out how to do that, how to live with an ease in the rest of my life that didn't require a constant state of me being a meditator.
Uh-huh. Yes. And you're preaching to the choir here. I just wrote a blog recently about how we need to get beyond the compartmentalization of mind, body, and spirit, because we tend to do things like think that we have to meditate in order to have those experiences. And it's really the integration that we're all seeking. And meditation can be a tool for that, but it's not necessarily the tool.
Right. Yes, yeah. And I think if you love it, it's wonderful.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's a great thing to do.
Right.
And if you love it, and as long as you understand that you're doing it for the process of it, I think there's an agenda that many people have when they meditate. And in having an agenda and making it be in the future, someday I will get there,
uh-huh.
you actually negate the fact that it's possible to be there right now.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the flip side of that is if you are not getting to meditate, you think that you can't have in your day what meditation normally brings for you. So it's like, you know, you're darned if you do, you're darned if you don't.
I think it's good for people to know that what we're talking about takes, let's say 5-10 minutes a day. Of going into your body, coming out of your mind, into your body, disengaging from the crazy ant in the attic,
mm-hmm.
not trying to fix or get rid of certain things about yourself. These are some of the practices that I teach people. And also asking yourself daily, what's not wrong right now?
Uh-huh.
What's not wrong right now? So that you can start changing the orientation of your brain to the positive,
uh-huh.
which allows you to take in the good, which is very important.
Mm-hmm. Powerful. Well, we are coming to an end here in a minute or less. Do you have some last tidbit of wisdom you'd like to share, Janine?
More of what we've said. There isn't something new to add to it, but the thing that I would like to say to everybody is that it's possible for you in your life. This doesn't need to be a fantasy life. This doesn't need to be a someday. You don't have anything wrong. I believed I was damaged in my DNA somehow,
uh-huh.
and that it wasn't for me. It is for you. It is possible for you now, and it does take some, a sort of flame to want that. And a couple of minutes a day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
And, what those couple of minutes consist of, so there are a list of touchstones in the back of the book
right.
that really are what these touchstones consist of, many of which we've talked about today.
Mm-hmm. So do you think it's possible for us to go from, as you say, worrier to warrior?
Of course I do. And what I think is possible is to notice that when you're worrying, you can turn to yourself and be kind to that. You can say, it's the oh, sweetheart practice that I teach people. Oh, sweetheart, I see that you're worried about this. So, and it's usually an association, an impression, a memory from the past
uh-huh.
that you're projecting into the future.
Right.
You can be kind to it. You can ask yourself if it's true. You can just get real with it, but with kindness, not with judgment.
Mm. And I love the fact that you're talking about the power that comes from that sort of acceptance and vulnerability. That's such a great message. And
yeah,
I wish we had another hour to talk. This is very deep, and this book is filled with wisdom. Again, everybody, it is called This Messy, Magnificent Life, A Field Guide by Janine Roth.
Janine, thank you so much for joining us here today. You're doing such important work, and I'm grateful to have had you on the show.
Thank you so much. It's been a joy.
And it's been a joy to have you here, too, as well. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to the Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.stellarreflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.transformationtalkradio.com.